on 100.5 ESPN and the ESPN Madison YouTube channel. It certainly is a scramble this week. No Riley Yauch, no Pablo Iglesias. It's Jesse Nelson, John Audius, and Wally Lukashins. What are you guys watching?
John is making fun of my golf shot with me because I have up my, hair down showdown against McKenna, and you get to see why they don't trust me with golf clubs at Camp Randall.
He's got, not highlights. He's got video of him playing golf, and it's low lights. Yeah.
Wasn't exactly high-level golf being played, so
keep it rolling. I want to see these.
It's a disaster. It's not good.
John and Wally are at Camp Randall Stadium, where Upper Deck Golf has turned it into a golf course for this weekend. If you guys want to keep watching Wally's golf highlights, you can do that. I'll talk to Jason Wilde back here in the Everlight Solar Studio. Jason Wilde, host of Wilde and Tausch, weekdays 9 to noon, very well-produced show on ESPN Wisconsin. Jason, good morning. How you doing?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
I'm top of the world.
John and Wally are having a better time than I am, but John and I had a great time this morning playing golf at Camp Randall Stadium. But, of course, one of the big stories is Wally's darts. What did you call that yesterday?
Wally's dart disaster.
The dart disaster.
And it was a disaster.
Jason, you heard about this, right?
Oh, I heard about it. I have not seen the outcome, though, so please fill me in on how disastrous it was.
Well, it took me 8 hours and 15 minutes to complete, Jason, and the kicker is that I was...
8 hours?
Yeah, 8 hours and 15 minutes, and I was 100 points away from being finished at 5 o'clock. It was going to be beautiful, going to your Friday, everyone's happy, and then we get a message that my father and best friend from home donated $500 to take 5,000 points away from me, so I was stuck there for another 2 hours. I thought family meant something, Jason.
It does. I love your dad. What a great thing to do.
It did help the kids. I'll give him that. It helped the kids.
See?
It just didn't help me very much, Jason.
Didn't help his kid.
No.
But it helped the kids. So that's a good thing.
He was looking at a macro approach is what it was, Jason. But,
nothing but respect.
I suppose is this, so.
So just out of curiosity, not that I'm not happy to talk to John and you, especially given John's great work on Badger Volleyball and Sid having been at their camp a couple weeks ago, it's great to be with the two of you. And I mean, I went a whole day without talking to Jesse yesterday, so thank God he's producing. But is this turning into Sunday karma where it's just host roulette and I never know who I'm going to get? From week to week?
I mean, it's in the name, Jason, the Saturday scramble. You never know exactly what you're going to get. You show up at a three-person scramble today with John, Jesse, and Wally.
What could be better?
Jesse, did you hit balls at Camp Randall already today? Is that
yes.
what you said?
Did I hit balls at Camp Randall today?
He was on fire. He was hitting them straight.
I had a
five
pretty
birdies.
Good game. So the way they do the scoring at this thing, Jason, yes, John and I played a round of 9 holes this morning. And so they have 9 different stations set up all around Camp Randall. So each one is designated as a different hole with this thing with Upper Deck Golf. It's really cool. It's only irons. Every shot's anywhere from, I'd say, 80 to 110 yards is kind of the average. There's a couple of outliers, either shorter or longer in the run. It's a tough start getting used to kind of how this looks and what you're doing and the feel for it.
Okay.
If you land it, there's designated rings around each hole. So you're aiming at a very specific hole, and then there's designated rings around it. So if you get it within, it's about an eight-yard radius diameter around
radius?
The
I
hole.
Yeah.
So if you land it. Math never been a strong suit. If you get it within
what a crew.
If you get it within 8 yards, it's a birdie. If you get it within a little bit longer than that, it's par. If you miss the whole thing entirely, it's a bogey. And then if you get a hole in one, it's within 2 feet of the hole. I had 5 birdies playing head to head against John this morning. I had a good day.
And I saw us, and obviously we've partnered with them for this event, and Jim, Matt, and Molly were there yesterday in the Wilde and Tausch time slot, right? Where are you hitting from?
All over the stadium.
So you're walking from section to section. Yeah. Are you in the upper deck where it sways when they do jump around? Are you way up there?
Yeah, John, you're looking at it right now. So explain what the map looks like for Jason here.
Yeah, so you start basically at the Ho-Chunk Gaming 1917 Club level, right? And then you kind of got to go up off to, what'd you say, off to Kellner Hall.
Yeah, Kellner Hall's to the right.
I can't even see what section that is. But you're basically at the very top of the first level. and you do that for a bit, and then as you get around to the, I'm not good with directions, the media
section,
side.
The student section.
Then the media side, you go up above on the second level and you hit down and it's really fun.
There is no way that Ed Policy is letting us have this at Lambeau Field, right?
I hope he does.
I hope he does. It'd be fun there.
This is unbelievable. The problem is that I'm wondering, Jason, how many golf balls are they going to find in the fall on a Saturday just walking through because Jesse Nelson's shanking them into the bleachers?
I did have one that clanked off some of the metal bleachers. That was a fun bonk. You just hear it up in the upper, like, oh, boy, that was a bad one. And you know the whole stadium can hear you when you do that. Well, and you actually bring up a good question there, Wally, because so we played golf at Camp Randall Stadium. There's a baseball game at Bristol Motor Speedway tonight in Virginia or tennis, wherever that is. Is there any sport besides a Wisconsin Badgers college football game, Jason, that you think would ever be played at Lambeau Field under Ed Policy's regime now that Mark Murphy has reached his mandatory retirement age?
So we've had soccer games, right? We had the friendly between FC Bayern and Manchester City. I think we're going to have another one of those in the future. Did we not have a hockey game at Lambeau Field?
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Which I love those, by the way. Having cut my teeth as a beat reporter, covering Wisconsin men's hockey under Jeff Sauer, I learn more about covering a beat every day from Coach Sauer and those teams than I learned anywhere else. And so I have a soft spot for that. I did not get to go when it was at Lambeau, but I love it when they do that. They've done it at Wrigley. They've done it at the Big House. Like, I just think that's great. So I could see them bringing that back again. Obviously, as you mentioned, Notre Dame is playing a home game at Lambeau Field next year. But I would be curious, you know, with the incredible success of the Pickler and with Matt LaFleur being a member now of the Green Bay one, and I think our Menominee Falls one is on the cusp of opening, if I recall correctly. I want to see the world's largest pickleball tournaments on the floor of either Camp Randall or Lambeau Field. Like, how many? I'm not the pickleball expert, but I'd be curious to know how many courts you could fit into a football stadium. That would be my next one that I'd like to suggest.
I don't know anything about pickleball. Still, I got a kind of feeling that Jason, I thought that you were going to tell us that you like play in your like off season, that like 2 weeks where you actually don't have to talk about anything. I thought you were going to just tell us that you and Mark Tausch are out there tearing down and closing bars and everything.
Well, Tausch has already decided that I must stink at it, so I'm not I'm not going to play with him. But I do appreciate the fact that we have a membership now to the Pickler, so I'm going to go, really hone my game, and then surprise him by beating him, because I know about that bad knee of his, so I'm just going to hit to that side all game long, and I think I can take him.
A lot of change of direction. I like that. Speaking of change of direction, though, I have to ask something Packers-related.
You're
going to
change direction in the conversation. Nicely done.
You like that? You like how we did that, Jason? Just trying to learn from the best over here. I tell you what, though, changing directions to the Packers, we just were talking before we had you on. Two trade requests came in this last couple days, Terry McLaurin and Micah Parsons. We understand it would be very unlikely that we would see anything happen with the Packers getting involved, but could you see Goody picking up the phone, figuring out what value is, and see if there is a possibility of making some kind of ginormous splash before the season gets going?
Walter.
Yeah, I figured I was going to get that. I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful.
Hey, look, Micah Parsons is on a Pro Football Hall of Fame trajectory.
Reggie White 2.0?
I can't imagine that it's a trade request, it's a trade demand. It does not mean it's going to be honored for either of these players. And if either of these teams let these guys out of the building, they're just stupid. And, you know, we talk about Jerry Jones a lot when Evan Cohen joins our show, because the Cowboys move the needle for ESPN in a huge way, and I get that. Jerry Jones, I just don't know why you would do this to a field-tilting player like this. I mean, Yeah, you can't pay everyone, but you have to pay your stars. And if you don't, you're committing malpractice. And so the fact that this Micah Parsons thing has reached this point, I'm guessing Mike McCarthy's sitting up in Door County going, well, glad I'm not in charge of that operation anymore. I just don't understand that the Terry McLaurin thing is like Davante Adams 2.0. He's 29 years old, and suddenly now, you know, these teams are reluctant to give third contracts. It's not just Goody. So that one I also don't understand, because you just went to the NFC Championship game. You got a young quarterback who is dynamic in Jaden Daniels. Why on earth would you, as Homer might say, fiddle and diddle with your star wide receiver? I just think I don't understand what either of these teams are doing. I can only imagine, though, that the rest of the NFC, the Packers, the Lions, the Eagles, like all the contenders are looking, going, yeah, good, good, keep it up, keep it up. Seems like really good management to have two stars in the NFC East being demanding trades. So do I think either one of those guys are going to be a Green Bay Packer? I do not. I never say never, because I still remember Julius Peppers waking us all up one morning on a weekend with him taking his picture inside Lambeau Field, and not a single insider had anything about that before Julius posted those photos. And remember, Julius Peppers was a really good football player for those 3 years the Packers had him. Mm-hmm. Like, there were people that thought he was washed. They went to two NFC Championship games. He was an incredible motivator. The guys wanted to get to a Super Bowl for him, because he'd been to one previously with Carolina but didn't win it. Like, if you can add guys that tilt the field, they can take you places that you won't go without them. And so I would never say never, but this just feels like if I were to trade either one of those guys, if I'm the Commanders or the Cowboys, I ain't trading them to a team that can come back and bite us anywhere other than the Super Bowl.
Jason, family night is tonight. Is there a family night practice? I don't know how you would phrase what the event is, but is there anything?
You did it. Perfect.
Okay, perfect. All right.
It used to. So this is all Bulaga's fault. Our great teammate, Brian Bulaga, tore his ACL during the 2013 family night, one of the few that wasn't heavily impacted by bad weather. And so it was the family night scrimmage in 2013. It was the family night practice in 2014 because they did not want to lose any more key players to full contact. But they are, in fairness, and I always get a kick out of this, Jesse knows I've said this before, but they are going to do some tackling late in practice. But it's always the guys that are on, like, you know, from player like 68 to 90 on the roster. So, like, you're basically saying, hey, you guys aren't good enough, so we're willing to risk you getting injured to see what you can do in a full contact situation.
Yeah, I was just going to say, what do you take away most from a family night?
So I think it's interesting, and I don't think I'm just buying into the narrative that the team puts out there, because they keep saying there's going to be 70,000 people. That is not accurate. Last year they were at 50,000, and this used to be an event that sold out almost right away. There are tickets still available. So if you guys are, you know, when you're done over there at Camp Randall, if you want to come watch a practice and get some fireworks in, there's still tickets available, priced at $12.42. But I do think that there's value, even if you played at Texas like Matthew Golden, right? Even if you played at Georgia like Warren Brinson. Like, I think there's a value in going into Lambeau Field with a crowd there and just getting that feeling and those butterflies kind of out of your system. So, and there's certainly guys that have never played in front of crowds that big. You know, they've got the fourth string quarterback, Taylor Elgersma, who is Canadian. I'm guessing he didn't draw 50,000 people for a game, much less a practice. So I think that's good. I think from an evaluation standpoint, you know, it being in the stadium makes it different than a regular practice. So there's certainly going to be that evaluation from Goody. But it's, I like to call it the first real milepost in training camp. You know, training camp opens, you have practices, you have some padded practices. Then it's, family night. Then we've got the preseason opener against the Jets next Saturday. The following week, they've got their joint practice in Indianapolis with the Colts and then their game against the Colts. And then the week after that, we've got the Seahawks coming to town for a joint practice and a game. And then, you know, then before you know it, September 7th this year, and you're playing against the Lions, and you better be ready for prime time. So even though I think it's a late afternoon game. So it'll be interesting to see how much they get out of it tonight. I know for a lot of the guys, though, it's just another practice that have been here for a while, except their families come, and then they get to watch fireworks with them afterward.
Jason, last question for you. I saw your article on channel3000.com talking a little bit about Jordan Morgan perhaps not getting like a true opportunity to win the left tackle job, but he's gotten a little bit of looks here in the last few days. How has he looked when he has had the opportunity to run with the ones at left tackle? Does he seem like he might be able to make a push for that starting job?
Well, I think it's important, Wally, because we didn't necessarily know what was going on Thursday, and it turns out that Rashid Walker has a groin injury. I talked to him yesterday, and I wrote about it in my story about family night on Channel 3000, but it turns out that Jordan Morgan wasn't getting more reps because he'd made a move. He was getting more reps because they shut down Rashid Walker during the second half of Thursday's practice. He did not practice at all yesterday. He is not expected to take part tonight in family night. So I don't know if it's so much Jordan Morgan has splashed how good he is as a left tackle as it is that they need him to play left tackle because the guy he's competing with isn't currently available. Now, I would add that, as you pointed out, you know, they didn't put because of what was going on with Elgton Jenkins and what was going on with Aaron Banks, they were both dealing with back issues. Jordan Morgan wasn't even playing left tackle at the start of the week. Like, he was at guard because they didn't have enough guards. And so this is, you know, kind of ball don't lie kind of a thing. It's now he's getting the opportunity that he wasn't getting earlier in camp because Rashid Walker is down. So injuries kind of prevented him from getting opportunities at left tackle, and now injuries are giving him opportunities at left tackle. And, you know, tonight's a big night for him. You know, there's nothing Rashid Walker can do to help his argument to be the starter still, but there's plenty that Jordan Morgan can do. So it's an important night for him to come out and perform well and show that he is able to play left tackle at this level. He has not done that previously, even though his entire football life has been spent at that position. And I do think it's also important for him to continue to work elsewhere, because if Rashid Walker ultimately wins the job after starting 35 games at left tackle, they're going to need a sixth man. And so I think it's really important that Jordan Morgan gets work at all the different positions, you know, because if anybody gets hurt, he's the next man up. Even if it's at center, if it's Elgton Jenkins, they're going to move Sean Ryan to center, and then Jordan Morgan would come off the bench. So he's got to keep improving not only left tackle, but he's got to keep improving his versatility as well.
Jason Wilde joining us, Wilde and Tausch, weekdays 9 to noon on ESPN Wisconsin. Jason, I have one last question for you, because I don't know if we've neglected talking about this all week. Maybe we'll talk about it more on Monday when Tausch is back. Sterling Sharpe is getting inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame this weekend. What does that mean to you?
I have no comment. He wouldn't talk to the local media when he was in Green Bay, so I, as the local media, I'm not going to comment on him. No, I'm kidding.
But, wow. I was about to be like, oh, my goodness.
Like, have a good one, Jason.
In all honesty, though, I never did cover him. His career ended with that neck injury in 94, 95, and so I started in 96, so I never crossed paths with him. I mean, look, there are certain players. He was a three-time first-team All-Pro. He led the league in receptions. He led the league in touchdowns in different years. I mean, he was really, really great. He deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. Now, I would argue, and this has nothing to do with his media policy locally, but I would argue that Mike Holmgren, if you made me choose one person with Packers ties and I could only get one into this class, I think Mike Holmgren deserved it more. I'm not saying that Sterling Sharpe doesn't deserve to be in the Hall, but he only played 7 years. I think Gale Sayers is the only one with a shorter career to have made it to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He was great for those 7 years, but, you know, does that mean that Davante Adams, who is a three-time All-Pro, first-team All-Pro, and has, I think he's going into like year 11 or 12 this season, does that mean, I would certainly hope that Davante Adams is going to be in the Hall of Fame then, right? They both won the same number of Super Bowls, zero. But I'm really disappointed in the Hall of Fame electors. They changed the rules for coaches to get in. It was not a majority that they had to get to be selected. They had to get 80%. And I think Mike Holmgren came up two votes shy of the 80% threshold. So still the vast majority of the electors voted him in, and he still didn't get in. And now next year, Belichick theoretically is eligible, even though he's coaching in Carolina. He's not coaching in the league. And so that's another year for Mike to potentially have to wait. I just thought that they really botched that, and I think their rule change was ridiculous. So the Packers should be celebrating two of their own going in today instead of just one, but unfortunately it'll just be Sterling Sharp. Here's the funny thing. Like, I know our Channel 3000 story is written by Rob Motti of the Associated Press, because Sterling didn't make himself available to the local media even now, like 30 years after his career ended. So I congratulations to him, but I wish Mike Holmgren was getting in instead.
Fair enough.
Holmgren's got to get in at some point.
Yeah, but Jesse, my thing is, and look, none of us knows what's around the corner for us, right? But Mike's, I don't know, 73 maybe?
You want him to be alive and well when they get in and be able to celebrate with their families.
Mm-hmm. Right. Like, I swear baseball waited until, just to be vindictive. And look, Pete Rose was not a likable fellow. I get it. I watched the documentary on like HBO, and if that was supposed to make him more likable to get him into the Baseball Hall of Fame, it failed. But I feel like they basically just waited until he died before they reinstated him. So I do think that this was an oversight by the selectors, and I don't criticize them very often. They have a difficult job, but the fact that they changed the rule, and that under previous rules, Mike Holmgren would be in, and now he's not, I take issue with that.
According to Google, 77 years old, Mike Holmgren.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, again, I hope he lives a long, healthy life till he's 90, and he gets in when he's 78 or 79, but like, come on, man. What are we doing here?
I agree.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks, Jason. Talk to you Monday at the ESPN Madison Open at TPC Wisconsin.
Are you driving me again, or do I have to drive myself? Jesse?
If you want to come over, feel free, but there is plenty of parking available this time around.
Okay. I think I can handle it. All right, guys. Enjoy your Saturday. Hit them straight. Take care. Be good.